Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 19th. I'm Ray Graff. I got to tell you, if there was a Vox Pop Hall of Fame, our guest today would be in it. Now, there isn't one, but Rich Guthrie is here anyway to answer your burning questions. To be clear, there is no Vox Pop Hall of Fame. He's not in it, but Rich Guthrie is a fine person all the same, right? Yeah. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your bird questions to voxpop@wamc.org. Buckle down, get ready for a dynamic hour of bird calls with Rich Guthrie after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program with our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich has retired from the New York State DEC. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a question about birds, best to call early, because, you know, the early bird catches the worm, yada, yada, yada. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Hey, Ray. I'm here. Good afternoon.
How's the health? How's everybody doing down there?
Everybody is fine, as far as I know, myself included.
That is good, sir. So my wife and I were talking about birds last night.
Oh, how nice.
Well, you know, 19 years married, and eventually it comes to that. So we're talking about birds, and she said, I was out in the backyard. I saw cardinals today, and I saw blue jays. And I said, well, really? And she said, yeah, well, I didn't see it at first, but I heard the sound they make. It sounds like an old squeaky clothesline. And I said, you know, I've seen a lot of blue jays and I've never once heard the sound they make. Is she right about that?
Yeah. Hey, that's a what an apt description, because that's how I've always related. And my dad as well. Squeaky clothesline, the squeaky wheel of the old metal clothesline pulleys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a blue jay.
And you really can't imitate that. Even the great Rich Guthrie can't do that, right?
Actually.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, all right,
this
go.
Could hurt.
All
this
right.
could hurt.
Well, it's really in the
tell
show.
Zach.
All right.
Something like giddly, 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 giddly.
That sounds
that's
like
a more musical end of it.
Yeah, but it's almost like Morse code there.
You know, maybe they're trying to tell us something, right?
Oh, the birds are talking to us again. All right, a couple of quick emails here, Rich, and then we'll jump right to the phones. The lines are loading up fast. This email came in, about 20, 30 minutes ago from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. Chris writes, we are in the lower Hudson Valley near West Point. Birders are here reporting northern rough-winged swallows mixing with tree swallows while hawking over inland ponds. Would rough-winged swallows do that? Is it possible?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The rough-winged swallow has interesting aspect in having what might be the longest common name in the birds of our area.
Hmm.
Yeah. The maximum number of letters in the spelling of its name.
I didn't know that.
Well, how about that, huh?
All right, so now, it's possible.
Yeah, they do nest in the area. This is kind of like the northern extent of their range, although they do, you know, they're interesting in that they nest in holes in the side of things.
Oh, yeah?
Usually in the side of a sandbank. But I remember one time up in the Port of Albany, a pair of rough-winged swallows, we put the northern part out for now,
right.
Were trying to nest in a scupper of a ship, one of the freighters that was tied up at the Port of Albany.
Oh, yeah.
And they had identified these scuppers as a neat place to build a nest or put a nest in. They're in for a surprise once that ship started sailing back to the Atlantic Ocean and to who knows where.
All right. This email came in from Laura in Fulton County. Laura writes, a few days ago, a blue finch came to my feeder. I looked up the bird online, and a bird expert kept telling people that it isn't what they were seeing. People wrote in from Alabama, Connecticut, Wisconsin, etc. He insisted they must be seeing an indigo bunting. I know what that bird is, and this finch is not. It comes with the yellow finches, is the same size, same beak, etc. The only thing different is what is normally yellow is blue. What do you think?
Indigo bunting.
Ah, really?
Yeah, I was ready to jump on a real good possibility up until same size as the goldfinch, same beak as the goldfinch. The other blue finch-like bird that we have around here is called the blue grosbeak.
Oh yeah,
which is big. I mean, not as big as a cardinal, but it's got a honker the size of a cardinal.
Nice.
It is out there, and that's one of the first things that catches your eye. My, what a big bill you got.
Okay.
And without that, indigo bunting.
All right, fair enough. All right, to the phones we go. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today on the program. Kathy in Seward, New York. Kathy, you're up.
Hi. I have a sad story. Uh-oh. I have a pet door, and I have two cats.
Mm-mm.
And lately they've been bringing in anything that they catch from outside. Happily, often it is, you know, and I'm not necessarily prejudiced, but a lot of rodents. But sometimes they'll get a bird. I came home the other day, and I see this bird flapping in the window, and I thought it was trapped between the storm and the inside window, and then I realized, no, it's inside the house. So I rushed in the house, and the bird flew over onto the counter, and the cats, like, were in hot pursuit. And, you know, I shooed them away, and I threw a dish towel over the bird and brought him outside and, you know, basically saved him. He was so shook up that I was even able to pet him a little bit before he flew away. So I got a good look at him, and I looked him up, and he's a brown creeper.
Yes.
And they go up the sides of trees.
Yes.
And I read in my bird book that they use their stiff tails for balance.
Okay, well, it probably happened. Somehow the bird got into your house. Could be the cat brought it in. Could be it flew into an open window or open door. More than likely, I suspect.
No, I didn't have anything open. I know they brought it in because they've done that.
Yeah, I suspect it was your cats.
And the sad part that I wanted to relate is that apparently they pulled out a lot of his tail feathers.
Yeah,
and I hear that
damage.
They use the tails for balance when they're going up the tree, you know, to peck out all the insects that they eat.
I understand.
The question is, will they grow those tail feathers back?
No. That poor little brown creeper is doomed to die. And the reason I say that is because when a cat takes a bird, outside of the physical damage that you can see, the poison injected by the fangs of a cat or the claws of a cat are eventually lethal for the most part.
No
and so
kidding.
Full blame goes to the cats.
Yeah.
And I'm really shocked to hear that's the case. It's such a tragedy to have a bird migrate 2,000 miles flying on those tiny wings over that long distance only to return to have to succumb to just the whims of an outdoor cat.
Mm.
I know you have no delight in cats going outdoors at all.
Well,
no.
Kathy, we have to take a
but
break.
He really won't make it. I mean, I was concerned he wasn't going to be able to pick his bugs out of the trees because he wouldn't have the tail for balance.
I understand, and you got that picture correct, but he's got bigger troubles than that.
Okay. All right.
He's got lethal toxins injected from the claws and fangs of the cat.
All right, before we take a break, thank you, Kathy, for the call. Okay, now I've been scratched by cats, and I know the Ted Nugent song, Cat Scratch Fever, and I've never really gotten ill. Is this only something that affects birds?
Well, a bird is so much smaller than you. You have a greater level of resistance and can resist that sort of thing.
Oh.
But it's sort of like a snake bite. You know, the proteins that are injected from the residue that's on claws and teeth.
Yeah.
Injected into the small body of a tiny hyper active bird with a high metabolism.
Okay.
is pretty dooming.
All right. Well, you have to take a break here, Rich. Do you want to sing a couple of bars of Cat Scratch Fever before we go to break?
Negative.
All right. Let's just take a break then. 800-348-2551 is our number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop. It's a bird show. Rich Guthrie's here. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. All right, Richard P. Guthrie, I know you probably have a list of some things you want to talk about, so why don't we do that, and then I'll handle a couple of emails, and then we'll go back to the phones.
Well, thanks, Ray. Yeah, you know, here's a curious thing about, you know, with all of this shutdown business that we have going on, a lot of the activities that had been planned, including some of the bird walks and talks that I had on my schedule, have all been canceled or postponed.
Yeah.
But things seem to be changing or about to change. So, and a lot of the club activities, the websites have been not yet updated to how they might adjust or adapt to the new regimen that's being incorporated. And that is, so what I recommend is folks be in touch with online their various Audubon chapters or their bird clubs in the area. And there are plenty, plenty, plenty of them in the listening area. In Albany County, the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, the Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, New York, the Hoffman Bird Club in Berkshire County, and over in Springfield, Massachusetts, the Hoffman, the Allen Bird Club, John Burroughs Natural History. There's so many of them. The Audubon chapters from the Adirondacks right on down to Sullivan County and over to Otsego County.
Right.
Check their websites for changes and rescheduled activities that have been postponed for the last couple of months.
Okay. So that's, I guess, maybe in a month's time, we will have a full roster of some live events. Things are look like they're opening up, at least in limited fashion. So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Just checking a few. Some of them are projecting that into July and hopefully beyond that, August and September. Things can be back up to normal. So let's hope that that happens.
All right. Rich, we're having some I think that the Germans might be jamming your signals here, so with any luck at all, we'll get through the show. But we're having a little scratchiness on the connection.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Okay. This email came in from Zachary, and actually this one came in on Sunday, and it's got words I can't say. My producer is already saying you're going to screw this up, and she's right. Zachary writes, my father listens to WAMC a lot, referred me to the birding program with Rich Guthrie. I had an inquiry about something that I have seen but have been unable to find an explanation for online. About twice now over the spring, I've seen on separate occasions where gulls hanging out in wetlands or flooded fields chase American avocets but will not chase any of the other sandpiper species in the immediate area. Why is it they only go after the avocets?
Well, I can only speculate. I can only guess that it's because the avocet is a very large sandpiper.
Yeah.
Black and white, and in the springtime, sort of a soft orange ochre color to the head. So I think the gulls are probably nesting, could be nesting, and they're concerned about who may be near their nest.
Yeah.
Not so much about the little sandpipers and plovers, but the avocet they perceive as a potential threat, and so hence the conflict.
Okay, a couple of more, and then back to the phones. This one's from Fran. Fran says, my cousin saw a pair of pileated woodpeckers in the front yard yesterday. One went to the maple, the other was pecking on the ground. The first then joined the second on the ground. Is it unusual to see woodpeckers pecking on the ground? Could this be a nesting pair? And that is from Fran.
It could be a nesting pair, and it's not unusual for two of our woodpecker types to be on the ground. That's the flicker, which is a fairly large woodpecker, and then the pileated or pileated, depends on where you're all from.
Right.
They will frequently be on the ground. And yes, they are likely a pair. They're not very sociable with others other than a perceived mate or a current mate. And so, and I would encourage, if in New York, you or any of the other listeners see any of this pairing or breeding behavior, to get on to New York Birds, the Avian Atlas program that's going on, the Breeding Bird Atlas program in New York. And check that out, because you can add some real significant citizen science into a meaningful project. And that's the Breeding Bird Atlas in New York State.
All right. And this one's from Dan, and then we'll get back to the phones. Dan writes, we live in southern New Hampshire. Last week I was at my parents' house, and we saw a few indigo bunting. Yesterday we saw one at my house 35 miles away. Are they pushing further north, or have I just never been lucky enough to see one?
I think it's a matter of your luck has finally caught up with you. You're now, good luck to you.
Okay.
They've been here. The indigo bunting is not one of the recent newcomers to the area. They've been around for millennia in the Northeast America. It's the blue grosbeak, the one I was speaking of earlier, that's beginning to inch its way. It's one of the slower moving, or I should say, progressing new arrivals into the Northeast.
Yeah.
They're nesting down on Long Island, New York, and then perhaps into Orange and Sullivan counties of New York State and southern Connecticut. And eventually, I think they'll be working their way up into the river valleys, into our area. So, yeah, indigo bunting, delightful little birds, and they have this curious way of showing up and making themselves known here in the early spring. And then they disappear. They retreat to the woods, and they're not around the backyards or at the feeders like they once were during the middle part of May.
So this is we pretty much have a chance now, and then soon they'll be gone.
Yeah, they won't be going anywhere other than back into the edge of the woods.
Right.
Where they, but for some reason, they show up at bird feeders and join the goldfinches for a very brief period of time. A curious little phenomenon with them. And but you can see them, and especially hear them, as driving down the side roads at the wood lot at the edge of a field where indigo buntings will be singing. And what about that is that against the sky, with the backlighting of the sky, they will not look blue. They'll look like just another little bird.
Hmm.
But if you get the right lighting on them, they have a brilliant, as the name suggests, indigo blue.
And what do they sound like?
Well, it's a slightly musical stretch of the imagination on the musical part, but they have a song that consists of couplets, and it sounds like two notes, two notes, two notes, two notes. And the mnemonic for it, which I like because it's representative, goes something like fire, fire, where, here, here, see, see.
Hmm. And only that bird? I mean, I've heard that many times. There must be a whole family of species that sound like that, though, right?
Well, mnemonics are sort of like naming star constellations.
Yeah.
You need a lot of imagination and a lot of liberty and forgiveness.
All right. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Birds today on the program. Gail and Oneonta. Gail, you're on. Hi.
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 I have a question in regards. I have a question in regards to groups of birds that sing in the morning. Who tells the first ones to sing? And is it the same one all the time? Has anybody ever studied this?
Who's leading the chorus? Yeah, that's a great question.
And why do they have to start singing so early? I like to get to bed before the birds sing. It doesn't always work.
All right, Richard.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I will, with the last question first, it's all a matter of insecurity. Those poor little guys are worried about who might be coming into their territory. And a lot of our birds that migrate in come in overnight. They're nighttime migrants. And so the guy who's sitting down there, and it's the guys who do the singing, with few exceptions, it's the guys who are doing the singing. And what they're doing is broadcasting, this is my territory. And they're announcing that to any of these potential rivals that might be migrating overhead through the night. and urging them or suggesting that they keep on going. Thank you.
Yeah.
And also, at the same tune, they're singing a love song for a potential mate that might be flying, migrating at night.
Mm.
And so that little warbler is down there by the in the field singing away early in the morning as the first light, so these birds begin to descend from their nighttime migration, looking around for a place to roost and perhaps a territory to claim.
Oh.
And this guy's saying, I'm here, honey, or stay away, buddy.
Okay,
both in the same tune. Now, who goes first? It's a matter of who happens to hiccup first in the night.
Very interesting. So they're doing kind of a Barry White thing. That's very cool, right? That's how you make it happen. Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're on.
Hi. Hello, Ray. Hello, Rich. Hello. I have been seeing lots of birds because up here in Plainfield, we have very few leaves on the trees, and they're really active at this time of year. So I have a couple questions. One is there's a great little Audubon site right here in Plainfield, and there's a beaver pond where ducks often come in the spring. And I saw a duck that I can only identify as an American widgeon because she had a gray head and a gray bill. And when I look at my bird book, that's the closest I could come. But when I look at the range, it implies that they wouldn't necessarily be in Western Mass breeding, although they breed like in a few locations in Massachusetts. So could I have seen a female widgeon? And would she have had one of those contrasting feathers in the back of her wings like a mallard has?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
The widgeon, first of all, the birds don't read the book. So they'll do what comes to mind in their own way. And so it's very possible, although highly unlikely, but entirely possible, that your widgeon has taken up residence there in that pond. And thank you for bringing that up. The other thing is sometimes these birds are not in a real hurry to get back to where they really belong, up in Vermont or up in Canada. So she is just lingering a little bit longer. It's the males that return first, and they're the ones that are they're pushed by all sorts of hormonal urges. They get up there, stake their territory, and then the females come lolly-dolly, shopping around, do a little window shopping for prospective mates as they go along. So either of those possibilities are there, and it's very nice. The Audubon chapter has that preserved for you to visit, and I urge folks, you bring up a good point. Now is a good time to get out throughout the area, especially further north before the leaves get out, because we are in the peak of mass migration of these bird species coming into the area. And there's such a wide variety. And the males are singing. They're out there trying to be conspicuous, not like other times of the year when they just want to stay out of sight and don't bother me. So now's the time to get out, bring the kids, social distance, have fun, look at the birds, and enjoy their song. It's great.
Well, Emily, thanks a lot for the call. You know, it seems the way you describe this whole thing with the female birds, it's a rather sordid existence, isn't it? Are the morals fairly loose of the birds?
Well, it's all a matter of perspective and yes and no.
Ah.
I mean, it works for them. Who do we to judge?
It works for them. Interesting. Bonnie in Hurleyville. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've had bird feeders for over 30 years, and this is the first year that we had Baltimore Orioles. When I looked it up, they're west. Is their habitat? Are they migrating? And if so, why?
Well, thank you. The Baltimore, down this way, we call them New Baltimore Orioles. But the Baltimore Oriole is a summer resident in our area, and they migrate away for the winter because they're mainly insect eaters, and where available, they'll eat fruit. Hard to find in the winter. So they migrate back to the tropics where there's lots of different kinds of orioles down there. This is our only representative around here, except in some parts, more southerly reaches of the listening area is the orchard oriole. So, and then out west, there's the Bullock's Oriole that's found west of the Mississippi into the Rocky Mountains and beyond.
Mm.
But the Baltimore Oriole, strikingly beautiful birds, they're named after the colors. The black and orange color is the colors represented on the flag of the Lord Baltimore family. Not so much from Baltimore, Maryland, but for the colors on the flag of Lord Baltimore and company.
Well, be darned. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
And when did Lord Baltimore walk the earth?
Well, way back when, but it was somebody who was, I guess, a fan of the flag. I can't say how that happened.
Bonnie, you want to follow up here before we let you go?
No, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. I love your show.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you,
calling.
Bonnie.
800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here, and Kathleen is in Summit, New York. Kathleen, you're on.
Okay, hi. I have bluebirds in my backyard for the first time in 20 years at least. Mm-hmm. And I put a nest box up a couple of weeks ago. Tree swallows came and looked like they were going to set up a nest. They were here for days. The bluebirds came in, and it looks like they pushed them out because they're the ones that made the nest. And I wasn't aware that bluebirds would fight for territory like that.
Oh, they do. When it comes to nesting, they get quite serious.
Yeah, it seems to me, because you can tell the tree swallows when they swoop down, that they've come back a couple times and been chased off. I saw them setting up the nest. This box is nice because I can lay in bed and watch it right out the window. And I happen to be talking on the phone when the bluebirds came. They came about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And by 5 o'clock, I had called my son and said, please come up. We moved a Peterson box next to it, you know, nearby, about 10, 15 feet away, so that both pairs might stay.
Good for you.
Nobody took the old box. I'm just wondering why that would be.
Well, it's hard to say. You know, tree swallows and bluebirds compete for the same nest situation, and that traditionally would have been a hole in a tree, a woodpecker hole left behind in a tree, and they would both seek out the same sort of nest sites. And if you get a beaver swamp with a lot of standing dead wood and a few woodpecker holes, perfect habitat for both to get along side by side. Imitating the hole in a tree with a nest box is a game plan that we put up, people have put up, to replicate that situation. And they're both competing for the same site. However, perhaps the tree swallows found another tree hole someplace and decided that would suit them better. But it's a good idea to have the duplicate boxes, the Peterson and the bluebird nest box, nearby one another so that one can pick and choose and the other can have the leftovers.
Kathleen, thanks a lot for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Rich, before we hit the break, I've seen blue jays, and they're quite striking. Do the bluebirds look similar?
No. The bluebirds are much smaller than the blue jay. They have a more attractive shade of blue. It's a deep sky blue and a rosy color breast. Mm. That is on the male. The female, subdued in somewhat, a lighter color hue on the blue, and not so much the reddish coloration. And their behavior is so much different. They're so much more demure. The blue jay is bold and brassy.
Yeah.
And the bluebird is just a little reticent, a little shy and laid back, and will be happy to sit on a wire quietly waiting for a bug to move around in the ground below and then pounce down on it and make that its meal.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen one all these years.
Again, blue is a color that does not go well with the backlit sky. But you can always tell a bluebird, that, first of all, a tiny little bird, but they always seem to have perch with a little stoop of the shoulder, a little bent-over look to them as they're up above on a wire, usually on a roadside telephone or electric wire, looking down for a bug below. And they have that look-down appearance to it with a stoop shoulder. And as you're driving along, check out guys like that and gals, and you'll be surprised how many bluebirds there are around because, you know, years ago, a lot of the old timers that I knew, you know, remarked that they had not seen bluebirds, not including you, Ray.
But, right.
The trick was that some smart people started putting up bluebird nest boxes, and you can check that out with the New York Bluebird Society on how to do it and how best to maintain them. And it worked. The bluebirds came back, and now you can drive along backcountry roads with an open field and woodlot nearby and see bluebirds.
All right, Rich, we have to take a break. Before we take the break, do you want to sing a couple of bars of Country Roads by John Denver?
Nice try, Ray.
All right, Dan, we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. He's so popular. The lines are so loaded. We have so many emails. He is just one of the most he's like the Placido Domingo of the birding world, and we're very lucky to have him here. Rich, we have so many emails. I tell you what, let's blast through very quickly. So concise answers, and then we have people who have been waiting upwards of a half an hour. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you betcha dupa. Here we go. This one is from somebody who didn't put their name on here. Good afternoon. I have a great horned owl who has nested in my yard. I was lucky enough to discover the owl had two babies sometime in April. My question is, how long will they reside in my yard? Also, the parent was nice enough to leave me a primary or secondary wing, a large, beautiful one. How common is it to find a feather like that, or will I never find one again?
Likely we'll find one here or there now and then, because birds of all kinds shed their feathers at least once a year. Every feather is gone. Every feather is replaced. And yes, the great horned owl will live in your area if he's happy there year round. And the babies will stick with mom and pa right up until November into December when they finally get booted out.
Okay, this one is from Deirdre in Lanesboro, Mass. I remember Rich describing how a blue jay will occasionally mimic a hawk, and I have actually heard that. A few days ago, I saw a blue jay in a tree in my yard. It was mimicking the sounds of a hairy woodpecker. Very funny. Is that true, Rich?
That is funny.
Is
and
it
yet
true?
They do a good hawk imitation. I don't know why. I've watched them do that to no avail.
Yeah.
I mean, the little birds at the feeder paid no attention to this imitation hawk sound. So why the jays do it is a good question, but they do a good job at it. And now, as far as a hairy woodpecker sound is concerned, never heard that one before.
No, okay. Well, you know, like expanding the repertoire. Very nice. This one's from Barbara. Barbara says, four of my friends in Troy, Schenectady, Hudson, at East Greenbush, as well as myself here in Altamont, have had indigo buntings in our yards. None of us have ever seen them hanging around before. What's up with that? An indigo party? Seems unusual to us. And that's from Barbara.
They're at it again. Their cameo appearance in mid-May, when they first arrive, they show up at bird feeders.
Yeah.
And then, as if on cue, they disappear into the woodsides. So, good for you. And if they keep coming back, all the better, but not likely.
All right, last question, and then we will take the long-suffering folks who have been on the phone here waiting. This is from Paula. Paula writes, if babies fall out of a nest and humans return them to the nest, will the parents kill the chicks?
No. And if that happens, returning the bird to the nest is okay thing to do.
Yeah.
If the bird is capable of standing up and moving around on its own, leave it alone.
Okay.
If it's on a yellow stripe of a highway, of course, move it to the side. But in nature, birds sometimes leave the nest before they're able to fly. Mom and Pop will take good care of them. They're just waiting for you to get out of the way. Baby birds go back into the nest. The parents will tend to it as if they were long-lost child.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. And Colin in Boyceville. Colin, you're on.
Yes, hi. I can't tell you how nice it is to have something else to talk about than me.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. We also have indigo buntings here, but that is not my reason for calling. Since last fall, we have had broadwing hawks in I live in basically a hollow. And every single time I step outside my house, I hear one of those hawks calling all through the winter and even still.
Hmm.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, we're listening. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I'm just wondering if that's unusual or not, because I've lived in this house for 30 years and I've never heard it.
Well, it is very, very unusual, and I suspect it's not what's actually going on there. Broadwing hawks are, for the most part, amphibian and snake-eating hawks. They disappear. They go to Peru and Colombia and Brazil for the winter. They're not here in the winter. I'm thinking that you probably have red-shouldered hawks that do a few. Boyceville is in the Catskill Mountains of New York, and a few might overwinter in the area. Most of them migrate away, but a few do stay over. But broadwing hawks, not so. They're not here. And they are just now returning.
I don't want to get, you know, grumpy about this, but I've listened to the Cornell website. I can hear that hawk sound in my sleep.
Mm.
I've heard it so often, and I'm just absolutely certain that's what it is. And not only that, I've seen them.
Well, I still have to. I'm a skeptic, being and working on true from the scientific point of view. The broadwing hawk is simply would not survive this area in the winter. So I'm going to punt. I'm going to ask if you document it in some fashion and send it to me. You know, I'll give you my email address and anybody else. Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie. That's guthrie@gmail.com. And if you could get an audio recording of it, that'd be great.
All right, Colin, I'm with you here. Okay. You know, Rich does this to callers sometimes, and he slaps them down. And I'm with you 100%.
He's the man with the knowledge.
All right, you're right.
I totally understand that, but it just has never stopped.
Interesting.
From
I agree.
Fall.
I hear what you're saying. And if you could change my mind, I'm all for it.
All right, Colin, thanks a lot for the call. All right, Rich, our number is 800-348-2551. Cheryl in Great Barrington, hello.
Hello, hi, Rich and Ray.
Hi.
I don't have a question, but I'm calling to let you know that I have a family of barred owls in our backyard.
Ooh.
My husband installed a barred owl box 8 to 10 years ago, and this is the first year that we have two owlets, and I'm looking at
Wonderful.
One right now from our house, and this is from a scope.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. That's
a happy note. Thank you for that.
I figured you need a happy story, and it's just fabulous. He's probably 4 or 5 weeks and ready to fledge.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, Cheryl, thanks a lot for joining us.
That's it. Just wanted to let you know.
Thanks so much. Over to Mary in Kingston. Mary.
Hi, good morning. Afternoon, actually.
Good evening.
I have a simple question. Where I work up in Woodstock, a beautiful bird flashed by me, and I had to look him up online. He is, and it was a male, something called an American Starter, and it's the first time I've ever seen one. Will I ever see him again?
Tiny little bird, American Red Star.
Yes.
I'm sorry,
yes,
what's
yeah.
it called,
and
Rich?
Red Start, R-E-D Start.
Hmm, interesting.
And actually, it's a fairly common bird along stream sides and wet areas because they catch bugs in the air. They're a type of warbler, again, one of these birds that winters in the tropics and graces us during the summer months around here. The French Canadians have a better name for it. I love it. They call it the flamboyant warbler in translation I would try the French pétoline flamboyant or something of that nature.
Oh, c'est bon.
Oh, yeah, tui. Wonderful. American Red Star. Delightful little black and orange flamenco-colored warbler.
Okay.
Yes. And it was beautiful. So it is common, and hopefully I will see it again. Yep.
Keep looking,
yes.
Thank
you so much.
Thanks, Mary. We appreciate it. Over to Karen in Newburgh. Karen, you're finally on. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, thanks. So we have a family of swallows that has nested in our bathroom vent, a second-story bathroom vent, and we've stopped using the vent because obviously we don't want to hurt the swallows, but we would also like to get them out,
yeah.
And we're just wondering how to do it, when to do it, you know, because we don't want to hurt the birds, but we would like to, you know, have our vent back.
Yeah.
I agree with you, and you'll just have to wait for the babies to grow up and fledge.
When?
For the time being, and then you might check to see if you could put a screen or a mesh trap at the outlet of that vent to keep that from happening.
Right.
And be sure to clean out any nest material that may be in there if you can reach it.
Yeah, I know. The problem is getting to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I hear you.
Do you have any idea on time, though, like time of year or?
Well, I would say any day now. And I'm curious, are they actually swallows or starlings? Do you know?
Well, we don't know for sure. We need to do a little more inspection, I guess. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Over to Jeff in Rosendale. Jeff, you're on.
Thanks, Ray.
Sure.
How are you, Rich?
Good, thanks.
Good. So the other day, my daughter was walking around our car, actually, and in front of her was a gravel bed. And in that, we saw what we think was a killdeer, which is a bird that I didn't know anything about until I looked it up. But the bird was shouting at her, basically telling her to move. And when we got back in the car and looked out the window, we saw there's some eggs just laying on the ground.
How about that?
So I didn't know we had birds that laid eggs on the ground. Are there any others around here that do that?
Yes, lots of different kinds of birds do, and the killdeer is a prime example of that. And they nest. Lucky for you, actually see the eggs because they blend in so well with the gravel. They're virtually invisible. Good camouflage. And killdeers. If you look at my blog on the Albany Times Union, I did a write-up on killdeers just a few weeks ago, and I've got another blog right at the doorstep ready to launch about kingbirds. So stay tuned on that, timesunion.com.
Great.
All right, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. And let's see. Okay, we go to Conway, Massachusetts. Michelle, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about a hawk I saw, but I'll preface it with a story. I was probably 200 feet or so away from a pond, and I happened to see something hopping, so I turned. Luckily, I had my binoculars with me. I turned, and I saw a hawk that was on what turned out to be a flicker.
Mm.
And it wasn't moving. It was just sort of hopping up and down, and I thought, well, perhaps the flicker's too heavy for it or something. And it was clearly alive. Every once in a while it would flap its wings. And not once did the hawk use its bill to, you know, damage or take the head off or anything. But it did finally hop over to the pond and just sat on it, drowned it right in front of my eyes.
Wow.
And then flew away. I was astonished. And do you think that was intended, or did it just happen to hop to the water?
Oof.
I think it was more like the latter. It just, you know, the water was in the way, and it worked for him. I've seen that happen sometimes in the past, and I can't say it was an intentional and deliberate planned method.
No, that would be murder if it was planned.
Well,
it was pretty amazing. So I was curious, do you think it was, I couldn't tell if it was a sharp-shinned or a Cooper's hawk, because it had a pure rusty-colored breast. It wasn't speckled with white at all.
Yeah, I suspect it was a Cooper's hawk. A flicker would be a bit large for a sharp-shinned hawk to take. Cooper's hawk, right on the menu.
All right, Michelle, thanks so much. And quickly now to Red Hook, New York. Diane, you're up.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I don't know a whole lot about birds, but I do have a bird feeder and I enjoy watching them. And lately I've had this yellowish bird, a yellow and maybe black bird. I can't really see him very often because he flies away so quickly. He is attacking my side mirror on my car, only the right one, the passenger side, never the other mirrors in the car. He just seems to be attacking that one. I've covered it over with a towel because he's scratching the side of my car. He or she, I don't know. But I just don't know what to do because he's always attacking my car and trying to land on it and scratch it up. Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, it sounds like a bird that's reacting to the reflection that it sees in the mirror on your car. And your technique of covering the mirror is probably the best approach. You could use a plastic shopping bag, if there's still any around, and cover it over, you know, for the time being. And eventually it will give up and carry on move along. So best technique is for that. And it's,
yeah, and it seems to be flying from the other side of the mirror. So it doesn't see the mirror itself because I parked backwards in the driveway, and it comes from across the driveway and trees and swoops down and around the mirror.
Wow.
I don't know. Does it think it's seeing itself and seeing a mate or something? But it only goes to that seeing, one particular mirror.
It's seeing what it sees as a potential rival male, and that mirror may be in its territory. The other mirror may not be. So, again, covering the mirror, and it may actually be using the mirror as a perch for the reflection in the window of the car. So either way, hiding the reflection is the way to go.
Well, Richard P. Guthrie, your email address once again, sir.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Well, I wish you were in the studio just to see how many calls we had here, and I'm sorry to everybody who didn't make it through. We'll see you next time there, buddy. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring Valspar interior and exterior paints, Cabot Stains at War at 22 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. Capital Roots, providing essential food services to seniors, families, and vulnerable populations during these challenging times, while also supporting our small farms and local businesses. CapitalRoots.org to learn more. The Hyde Collection, temporarily closed to support our community, providing online art with images and virtual exhibitions. HydeCollection.org for details. And Ali, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College, offering live interactive online classes in current events, history, science, literature, music, and more, beginning June 1st, berkshireali.org. Once again, thanks to the great Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for listening. Many, many apologies if we didn't get to your call. We'll try it again. Rich is always coming back. Like the birds in the spring, Rich returns to Studio A. So he'll be here again. We'll get you then. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 for Pets and Vets.